Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. We have the choice to use the gift of our life to make the world a better place. That's a quote from Dr. Jane Goodall, who sadly passed away recently. She certainly lived up to this, making the world a better place. And I've spoken about her work previously on the podcast because she was influential to me in many ways. A beautiful person and a beautiful role model. One of my favorite things about Dr. Goodall is that she was consistently curious and compassionate throughout all of the near 7 decades she was in the international spotlight. It is really astounding to consider that every interview, every encounter, every writing, and every appearance, she consistently displayed a combination of the scientist she was, along with the loving kindness she emanated. In episodes 7 and 11, I mentioned her work and drew from her book, Reason for Hope, A Spiritual Journey. Dr. Goodall helped us understand our commonality with animals. As you may be aware, one of the first field observations she made began the trajectory of her career. This observation corrected the misunderstanding science had at the time that humans were the only species to use tools. At the time, science believed that this distinguished us and made us kind of have an elite status with our species being the only one to use tools. However, she documented that chimpanzees use tools, and this changed that view. In fact, this observation is noted for changing what it means to be human because it demonstrated to us our commonality with animals, which is among the many things her incredible life and career offered the world. She helped us to understand that there are many, many things we share with animals. To me, her befriending of animals in ways that were the exact same as to how she appears to have befriended humans will be one of her most significant legacies. Because to watch how she interacted with animals, particularly chimpanzees, of course, but really any animal, how she observed them and gazed at them and really embraced them on many occasions, just her incredible way of being with animals is what to me is so striking about how she was. And, you know, again, it's so fascinating to me that at any time you watch her in the many appearances she's made, she's this consistent, engaging, kind of open, loving, vulnerable person. And I just think that's such a stunning example of one way to live in the world that will be with us for a long time, I hope. Because it's so unique, but yet so intensely important that I think that's part of the reason the entire world was drawn to her and her work is largely because of how she was, you know, how she was with others. For me, that's one of the most important things I'll remember about her is the feeling I had when I watched her interact with humans and chimpanzees alike. There's a way her face kind of lit up and she just felt, even though I was never actually physically in her presence, she felt very present to whomever she was engaging. And that has always been striking to me about her. She will be greatly missed. Dr. Goodall's death coincides with World Animal Day, which is on October 4th, in a rather uncanny coincidence. By the way, did you know there was such a thing as World Animal Day? Yeah, me neither. And I bet this is also a surprise to you that it started in 1925. So we are on the 100th anniversary of World Animal Day. What is World Animal Day, you may ask? Well, it's gone through a few iterations, but it's intended to coincide with the feast day for St. Francis of Assisi, who is known as the patron saint of animals. And they focus on action for animal rights and welfare. And this year's theme is Save the Animals, Save the Planet. Again, quite akin to Dr. Goodall's life and legacy. And that's the tie-in for this episode into the clinical work I've been describing lately. In a book from another one of the world's greats, Dr. Temple Grandin shares how to make the world a better place for animals in her book, Animals Make Us Human. In this book, she actually references Panksepp's work, which I have also highlighted multiple times on the podcast. As a reminder, there's a link in the show notes with a podcast playlist if you'd like to navigate the different episodes and topics. Dr. Grandin is referencing Panksepp's work as her understanding and assertion and experience that demonstrates that for animals, it's the emotions that drive behavior. And she draws on the affective systems that, as a reminder, are seeking, rage, fear, panic, lust, care, and play. And she lines it out in a straightforward manner, and that is, animals should live in environments that, quote, activate their positive emotions as much as possible and not activate their negative emotions any more than necessary, end quote. She states the rule is simple, quote, don't stimulate rage, fear, and panic if you can help it, and do stimulate seeking and also play, end quote. So we arrive here now where the last few episodes have left off, that emotions are the first appraisal or the first stop, I like to imagine, in our systems when we need to decide how to act or what to do. And the emotions are the first stop that helps us make those decisions. And often as humans, it doesn't even reach our cognitive awareness before we've made the decisions in some cases, because our body is going to always behave in the service of survival. And so it's going to start making decisions that we may not even be consciously aware of, such as how to position our body, whether or not to accelerate our heart rate, where to put our eye contact. All of these things start happening as we appraise each environment in which we're in. And this is why, for the practice of mental health, the 60 plus authors that I mentioned in episode 59, who wrote the article, The Rise of Affectivism, the reason they're asking for a shift in how we practice mental health therapy is their assertion that it's time for the practice of mental health to include interventions that are specifically intended to support emotions. Of course, as mental health therapists, we do that all the time. But what they're suggesting is not to do that through the cognitive interventions that dominate our field, but instead to consider emotion-focused interventions. And I also highlighted Dr. Les Greenberg's work in episodes since. He has a significant system in order to do that. And there are many other ways that it can be done. Specifically, one thing I learned early in my training actually came when I was doing my own dissertation work. And I was researching, you know, how animals entered the field of mental health at the time. And in researching the ways that humans project onto animals and that animals can be supportive in so many ways, I started learning the importance of asking about animals during the assessment or the initial intake conversation, meaning the first time I meet a new patient or their family, if they're a child, I ask about animals because I really like to understand this important dimension for most people. Not everyone has animals in their lives, but many people do, and they're not accustomed to being able to speak about them, especially as part of their mental health treatment. But for me, since emotions are closely tied to relationships, and I think relationships are a big factor in how mental health therapy can be successful, is the more satisfying someone's relationships are in home, work, you know, in the community, then the better their outcomes tend to be, especially for children. And I include animals as part of their relatedness. So a lot of times, children especially are much more comfortable talking about their relationships with their pets at home than they are about peers or even other family members. And you can really start to understand a lot about someone by how they speak about another being. And so it's a way to kind of support someone in gaining skills and relatedness to talk about their relationships with animals. And I do that quite frequently. And I feel like it also has an added benefit to therapy, and that it communicates that everybody's welcome here. You know, there's no exclusivity that we're only going to talk about human things, or I don't know exactly how to phrase it, but bringing someone's love and care for their animals into the therapy session for me has been a way that communicates one more way that everything about the person is welcome in our work together. And then I'm curious and I want to know about all the things and all the people and all the loved ones, including their animal friends and in their lives. You know, I want to know about all of it in order to support them. And this is among the many ways that I will attempt to continue following Dr. Goodall's lead in walking the planet in a way that befriends all creatures, and with a gaze and receptivity to all the things that I don't fully understand, but that I inherently know are important. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.